think that's why this year is so important to me. Everything feels very final. Time will pass, and maybe next year I'll say 26 recipes in 2 weeks is a lot. And so I'll make, say, 18 of them. And once I do that, the year after that, I'll make only 10. Until the year comes when I make just one. I really hope I don't wake up one winter and decide not to bake at all. Well, you can always call me. I'll help. You should probably leave it to the professionals, he says with a wink, pointedly putting the wooden jam spoon in the sink to wash.
Chapter 7. Dove. I worked on the book quite a bit today, and now my energy has hit a wall. I really feel like I've gotten inside the head of the police chief, who seems to be the only law enforcement representative in the entire town. His motivations are strong, and I work hard to imagine how my grandmother would have written the scene where he discusses the crime with the murderess by accident. Also, the guy's had a crush on this woman for at least 3 books now, so I need to remember to give him at least a couple sentences of a happy ending since it's the last book in the series. I don't want him to be left alone. I didn't intend to tackle this piece of the book at 3 in the morning, but I couldn't sleep. So I worked until 4 and then started baking. I've been productive, to say the least, but I don't want to be the one to suggest a break because I know Abby doubts my work ethic. It's a relief when she finally puts down the pages she's been reviewing and looks over at me. How many hours do you think we've been working on the denouement? She asks. Many, I say with as much enthusiasm as I can muster. I'm determined to give it as many more hours tonight as she wants. Abby herself is lying on her back on the floor. This does not strike me as strange at all because over the past several days, she has rotated between curling up on the sofa, splaying across an ottoman, going stomach first over the arm of a smoking chair, and mostly managing a weird yoga pose up against a wall. She has also tested every chair on the first floor. It's like having a cat. And it wasn't unsuccessful. She's an amazing brainstorming companion and knows more about how to structure a mystery novel than I even knew was a thing. I've written more words in the last hour than I would have done by myself in a day. But apparently there comes a point when you run out of creative steam, and I am almost afraid to lie down on the carpet next to her for fear of falling asleep. I'm going to need to eat something again soon, Abby says. She turns and looks at me, her body still spread eagle on the carpet. I think I underestimated how important the baking was to the creative process. I'll rustle up a snack as soon as you feel like we need a break, I say, hoping the power of suggestion works its magic. She flaps a forearm over her eyes and mutters, I don't think I have any brains left to storm. I know there's a second wind in me, but right now, I'm so fried. Thank goodness. I stand up from the computer chair and stretch, then join her on the floor. Lying side by side this way, it feels like we've known each other for a lot longer than we really have. She shifts and our hands brush against each other. I suddenly feel a bit warm. There's maybe an inch of skin touching, but it somehow feels like more. I wait for Abby to move her hand first. She doesn't. I turn my head to look at her, thinking that maybe we're having a moment. Maybe it's not. I'm looking at Abby and my entire body is doing a slow burn. But she's squinting at the ceiling using the hand that isn't touching mine to pretend she's stabbing someone. I realize she's been talking about the murder weapon. She previously explained to me that in all cozy mysteries, the actual crime takes place off screen. For a murder you can't see, we've spent quite a lot of time on the logistics of how the rescue dog might eventually discover the weapon somewhere in the town square. No thoughts on that? She asks, turning her head and catching my gaze. On what now? I ask, frantically trying to guess the specific question. Where precisely Ginger the rescue dog will dig up the cake knife, and how should we block the scene to make it plausible? I shrug. What's in a town square? Clock tower, city hall building, landscaping. How about a fountain? Abby asks. And it's iced over, and the weapon is frozen below the ice. I love this, she says. And maybe the murderer's clothes ripped on the ornament hooks from the garlands ringing the fountain's gate. Like there's some sort of identifiable personal evidence stuck in the holiday decor. Yes, I yell. We jump to our feet and high five. We're on a roll now. I love this too. Being so in sync with Abby, ping-ponging ideas and celebrating small wins with her. We still have to figure out exactly how to describe how Ginger does it, though, she says. So when did we name the rescue dog Ginger? I ask. Does that name feel right to you for this book? I was just testing it out on my tongue, Abby says. I look at her mouth and immediately decide that it is unwise if I want to keep my attention on the writing. I wander over to the window to contemplate the weather so she can't see the flush on my face. Outside, it still looks fairly calm, although there's a decent amount of fluffy new snow collecting on the sidewalk. There are more folks out now than this morning, likely heading out picking up provisions and handling last-minute errands. New Yorkers are used to false claims of snowmageddons that don't quite pan out, but nobody wants to be snowed in without a rotisserie chicken either. Is that you? Abby says from behind me. Is what me? Did you just make a noise? She asks. What kind of noise? A sad, whining noise? To be honest, over the last month or so, I probably made that noise myself, but this wasn't me. We look at each other and then look around, trying to determine from what direction the noise is coming. There's someone at the front door, I say, heading for the foyer. I look through the peephole. Nothing. Nobody there. Weird, she says. But also, yay, I don't want someone whining at the front door. I start back toward the living room, only to stop and whirl around when I hear it once more. And this time it comes with a scratching sound. I double back and open the door carefully. My gaze drops from the peephole level to small animal level. A damp, cold nose pokes through at the bottom of the crack in the door. It's Ginger, I joke, yelling back in Abby's direction, startling the dog, of course. It's the dog from earlier who face-planted in the snow and then went tearing down the street to the next neighborhood. Hey, pup, I croon. You're not alone, are you? I open the door a little wider for a better look. Nobody, not even the doorman with the fancy hat. Abby comes up behind me. Who are you talking to? Oh, hi, little guy. What are you doing out there in the cold? The collar has a tag. Hold on to it for a sec so he doesn't come into the house. Abby holds the dog collar while I step out onto the stoop and have a look around. A quick gust of cold air streaks by. We all shiver. Anybody lose a dog? I yell down to the sidewalk. As expected, I am ignored. None of the folks out here are looking around for a dog. Scratch that. Let's all get inside and figure this out, I say. We shuffle back inside and close the door, and there's total chaos as the dog goes nuts, wagging and sniffing and trying to get some love. Did you just manifest a rescue dog for our book? Abby asks, grinning. Obviously, this is Ginger, I tease. Oh, except, well, now I see there's a name on the tag. Oslo, and a phone number, and yeah, he's definitely not a Ginger.
Oslo is a great name, Abby says. Oslo, are you hungry?
Oslo wags his tail. I have some shredded chicken in the fridge. Can you call the number while I pull some food together? I ask. As Abby pulls out her phone, I head into the kitchen with the pup. He eats the chicken scraps while I dust snow off him with a tea towel.
It goes to voicemail, Abby calls from the other room.
Oslo has wolfed down everything, so he wriggles away from me and follows the sound of her voice. I head in after him and watch him wag his tail as Abby pets his cute, fluffy head. I think he might live in one of the corner condo units. I saw a doorman chasing him earlier this week, and I recognized the uniform. Let's take Oslo over and see. I could use a little air anyway.
Phew, boy, Abby replies, then cracks a smile. This is amazing. Do you believe in stuff like this? I mean, we were just writing about a rescue dog, and then this little guy showed up on your actual doorstep in need of assistance. Kind of makes you wonder.
Wonder about what?
Maybe this coincidence isn't such a coincidence.
She looks at me in a very conspiratorial way.
Maybe it's your grandma sending us a cheeky little wink.
Well, that would be on brand. My grandmother was the grand dame of cheeky little winks. I glance up at the ceiling. Well played, Bubby. Did you send Abby to me, too? I look over to find her pulling on one end of the pink and orange silk scarf I was wearing on my head the other day.
Oslo's chewing the opposite end, doing a nice job of distributing drool all over his side. We tie two of these scarves together into a makeshift leash, throw on our winter gear, and march out the door. It's actually a little colder than I realized now that we're away from the toasty brownstone. It'll be even icier later. When you head back later, be really careful, I tell Abby. Her boots skid almost as soon as I speak.
That was close,
she says breathlessly and slips her free hand into the crook of my elbow for stability. Oslo seems perfectly happy on the other end of the leash she's holding. I'd like to take credit, but it's more likely due to the chicken feast I gave him. In this manner, we head off down the block, like a family. At the door of the condo building, the uniformed doorman is taping up a sign that says there will be no doorman until after the storm. Excuse me, I say. He turns around and sees Oslo, then looks up at me with admiration. Nice. You recognize him. In all fairness, he found me, I say. Would you mind returning him to his owner before you go? He gets a heck no look on his face. They finally just left. Abby and I look at each other in alarm, and the doorman adds, Oslo was supposed to be with a dog sitter who was supposed to bring it to a boarder after dropping it off with a groomer. Abby and I look at each other again. Just keep it until after the storm, yeah? I'm sure you'll get a big tip. He slaps me heartily on the back and strides off down the walkway, somewhat quickly, given the snowy conditions.
Well, Abby says, that just happened.
She bends down and pets Oslo, switching to a baby voice.
We know you're not an it, sweet boy, and we won't leave you with that icky man. Do you want to hang out with Dove and keep him company during the storm in case he gets scared?
What? I can't take him. I've got a book to write. You take him. Abby takes a step backward.
He's not my neighbor's dog, and I live in a completely different neighborhood. That would be weird.
Oslo takes a couple steps off the walkway to sniff a fallen branch and plunges face first into snow that's deeper than it looks. A perfect idea pops into my head. An idea that ends with me getting to keep both the dog and the girl. I look at Abby and smile as she bends down and plops Oslo back on the path. You should stay at the house and help me take care of him. Abby looks up at me, surprised.
I don't have any of my stuff.
Okay. I stare unhappily at my boots. Intended message not received. She reads, but not between the lines.
Well, there's nothing for it. Let's stop at the bodega for dog food before they close, Abby says. We can get a small bag.
I nod. I suddenly feel exhausted. I have another thing I'm responsible for. I look down at Oslo. At least this responsibility might want to cuddle. Oslo cocks his head and gazes up at me like he already loves me, even though we just met. I reach down and scrub his ears.
Hey, says Abby. Since we're out, let's grab something to eat so you don't have to cook later.
If we keep walking towards Central Park, there's a dog run right next to that market area with the antiques and vendors. Actually, the flea market part has to be closed for the winter, but I'll bet there are a couple of food stalls open. Dog food can be our last stop on the way home.
Love it,
she says. And off our makeshift holiday family goes. We walk a block, then turn on Columbus Avenue, and as we approach the market area, I see I may have been overly optimistic about the options for outdoor pre-storm dining. But Abby gasps with delight.
I smell pizza,
she whispers reverently. Looking at her face, I want pizza more than I can ever remember wanting pizza before in my life. Why am I developing an uncontrollable urge to make her happy? I put my hand on my forehead and check for a fever. It appears that Oslo also smells the cheese and hot crust up ahead. He pulls so hard on his leash that Abby's forced to start running. By the time we make it to the kiosk, she's puffing and laughing at the same time. With her long, dark hair, pale skin, and cold, rosy cheeks, she's a sight for my very sore eyes. Abby and I joked about Bubby putting Oslo on our doorstep in a funny coincidence that mirrored the rescue dog in her book. I gaze up at the sky and smile. Maybe Bubby knows exactly what she's doing. Abby waves from the pizza kiosk.
There's only cheese left, okay?
I give her a thumbs up and fish around in my pocket for my wallet, putting the cash down before the owner can take her credit card. Nope, I say. On me. We take our slices and folded up paper plates and head for the dog run gate just a few yards past the kiosk. Someone has cleared a few branches recently, and I head to the nearest one, but Abby shakes her head.
If we sit on the opposite side, we can see both the dog run and the holiday lights.
She's right. All down the avenue, the stoplights are hung with glittering star decorations from one side of the street to the other. We settle in and take Oslo off his leash, holding our pizza high so he can't jump and steal it. He finally gives up after being distracted by another pup and dashes off to play. In the cold air, our pizza steams like crazy. Abby takes a bite and immediately flaps her hand over her mouth.
It's hot!
We eat quickly nonetheless, and it's delicious. We got dinner entertainment too, because the run is full of dogs trying to get the wiggles out before the storm. Even better, the snow is packed down enough for Oslo to go crazy without getting stuck. Abby finishes her slice and reaches into the bag for a napkin. She balances one on my leg for me and takes one for herself. It's all very casual and easy. She's a lot more relaxed than when she first arrived on my doorstep. And it also occurs to me that she's dropped her habit of asking me how the riding is going every 2 seconds. Are you nervous? I ask.
About what?
If I don't finish the book by the end of vacation, I say. She shrugs. It's not what I expected. But you came all the way with presents to visit my grandmother to make sure she stayed on track. What about making the book's publication date?
Eh,
Abby says. She seems more interested in watching the dog than in making our deadline. Why don't you care anymore? I ask. Abby looks at me and smiles.
Well, now I'm having fun.
I smile back at her. Me too. Oslo is wrestling with a large stick I think he stole from another dog. Abby points to the pup and laughs, her face lit up by a shaft of sunlight peeking through the clouds. I'm really lucky, I say, watching her profile as she throws the stick a bit shorter than Oslo expected. We watch him go pause over tea kettle and then right himself again.
Why?
She asks, not realizing I'm talking about her. I look away and take another bite of my lunch. It's been a good week, is all I say. I crumple the empty paper plate in my hand and then grab Abby's garbage too and dump it in the nearby bin.
That's it!
Abby yells. I whirl around.
The discovery of the murder weapon under a crust of ice in the fountain by the rescue dog is logistically possible during the time frame that we need it to happen.
She runs toward Oslo, who looks startled and then starts jumping up and down and barking.
Abby stretches out her arms. Pretend I'm a murderer, and I'm just casually hanging out at the winter carnival, she calls out. And you're the chief of police, so go stand over there next to the baked goods table.
The baked goods table?
That tree stump!
Soon enough, we're staggering about in the snow, running dialogue and making up narrative. Abby keeps trying to plant sticks in the snow like flags to mark the placement of evidence. Oslo keeps picking them up and running them back to her.
No, Oslo, if you move the knife over there by the coffee cart, it might end up incriminating the ambulance driver, and that's not right at all. Give me that. Oslo!
She finally gives up and jogs back over to me. Oslo in tow with his huge stick. Laughing breathlessly, she manages to say,
"This is a really difficult way to plan a murder."
And then she dramatically collapses against my chest in exaggerated exhaustion. Abby is hugging me and laughing and gasping for air and babbling on about the correct placement of the non-existent discarded weapon. I start laughing too and put my arm around Abby's shoulder to help her through the snow as we stumble back to the park bench and have a seat. She leans into the crook of my arm and then does that thing she's been doing to all the furniture at my house and throws her legs over the bench arm. A shift, and she naturally slides down to rest her head on my thigh. Staring up at the sky, she squints and says,
"You're right, Dove. You're going to get this book done on time. I am certain of it."
She turns her head and looks at me and smiles. Her eyes search my face and her smile fades.
How much sleep did you get last night?
That doesn't sound like a compliment. She sits upright again and brushes my hair out of my face, muttering,
"It's all messed up. I just meant that you're quieter than usual."
I've been running around with a dog for 20 minutes, not to mention you had a lot of sugar this morning and I can't keep up. I close my eyes. but it's true that I didn't sleep much last night.
Let me get Elise back on Oslo. One sec.
Abby unfurls the scarf and calls Oslo over. He must be pretty beat, too, because he trots up to her right away and she puts the leash on him without a fuss. I watch her get everything together, starting to feel melancholy again as the day slips away. It's windier now, and the park is beginning to empty out. I don't want Abby heading back too late tonight. I mean, I don't want her to head back at all because she'll be stormed in at her own apartment. And even though I started working on this book alone in the brownstone, it feels wrong now. Besides, who am I going to bake for?
Chapter 8. Abby. Oslo is pretty zonked out. We're upstairs, and he's splayed out on the floor watching me sort a stack of linens that have probably been here since the 40s. In the corner, there's a cute old-fashioned sewing machine on a table with a half-completed apron project folded up beside it. Besides that, pretty much every surface is covered with piles of tablecloths and napkins, quilting squares, and knitting supplies. And it's all getting dusty while Dove works on the book. I passed the open door a couple of times coming down the hall and wondered if he was having trouble dealing with all of this. I figured I'd organize it a bit and ask if he wants help identifying what to keep and what to give away. Oslo yawns and rests his head on his paws. If I'm going to get any advice from him, I'd better ask before he falls asleep. Did that feel like a date to you? I whisper. The pup blinks slowly. That's a yes, I note. Me too. I can't help but smile. Dove and I kind of make sense together, don't you think? Oslo emits a small snore. Right? I say. Me too.
Hey, Abby, where are you?
Dove calls from his spot at the computer.
Second floor. The sewing room?
Yeah. I hear Dove's footsteps on the stairs.
Hey,
he says, popping his head in first. He sees me sitting on the ground, surrounded by the piles of embroidered linens.
Wow.
How's it going down there? I ask as he enters the room. He has a strange expression on his face. He doesn't look happy. What is it? I press.
I don't feel like baking.
I stand up and put the linens aside, then reach up on my tiptoes to press my hand against his forehead.
Are you sick?
I don't know, he says.
Maybe.
He's staring at me very intently.
Listen, Abby, I've been thinking.
I take a step back, and he stops talking, probably because of the look of horror on my face. Nothing good ever came after that sentence.
This is good. I've been thinking that I don't want you to get into trouble at work for any part of this. I'm going to email Bubby's editor and explain how I'm involved. I'll explain my promise and ask her to keep her passing quiet until the book is done, to honor my grandmother's wish.
No!
Why?
First of all, we're so close. Dove runs a hand down his face.
And yet so far.
No, not far. Close. And it's not like you're absolutely never going to tell. But first, you're going to provide a completed project to fulfill the obligation. Why is he losing his faith now, so close to the finish line? You can do this. I mean, you don't have to. You can absolutely get an extension if you need one. Listen, you've been working around the clock. You're not feeling 100%. So before you throw in the towel, get a good night's rest and see if that changes things, okay? I feel like we're on a roll. And if we don't ride our wave of momentum to the end, it'll drag on for you.
I'm just so tired.
Dove's voice cracks. My heart goes thud. Have you thought about why I'm really here? I ask. Dove doesn't respond, but his eyes search my face. I think I'm here for exactly this moment. Because when you're a team, it means when one person is down, the other person is up. So we've been listening to you, and now we're going to listen to me. And that means you're going to take a break and refill the well, and then we're going to reassess our timeline.
Refill what now?
He asks wearily. The well. It's a writer thing. Never mind. Focus on the taking a break part. He nods. Then he looks around at the various piles. Organized piles, but not how he left it. I freeze, waiting for him to react to my well-intentioned meddling.
Every time I go looking for you, you're in a different part of the house doing a different chore. You don't have to do any of this, you know, he says.
I know, I say with a smile.
I like doing it. Organizing stuff feels good, and I figured you could use the help. Dove looks around curiously, sort of like he's testing that idea out in his head.
What are you doing with all of this?
At the moment, I'm sorting by type. Maybe I should have asked you first, but I kind of figured from what you said that it would be...
No, this is good. This is great.
His eyes widening.
I've been kind of paralyzed. It's hard to know what to do with it all. Thank you.
Should I do more? Dove manages a small laugh.
It's too much to finish before the end of the holidays. You'd have to come back.
We both look at each other. He looks nervous, biting down on his lower lip. I wonder how bright my blushing cheeks look. I don't mind coming back after the holidays, and I don't think he does either. But I can't be sure. I start chattering to hide the awkwardness. I have a hard time getting rid of things, particularly when they belonged to someone I loved. I worry that it feels disrespectful, but I don't think it should be like that. Nobody would want you to feel sad that you threw away old underwear or a blank postcard from the Grand Canyon or this. What is this anyway? I hold up what I know to be a bed jacket, but I also know that Dove won't have a clue. It looks like a shrunken, padded silk cardigan from an old movie. But it accomplishes the task. Dove laughs. So, for everything else that doesn't spark joy but makes you feel obligated, don't worry about it. If the memories aren't in a purse or a perfume bottle for you, then you don't need to keep all of it. The memories can live right here. I point to a picture on the mantle behind the sewing table. It's Dove, at about the age of 15, with very hilarious spiky hair. He's hugging his grandma, and she's looking up at him like he's tall enough to hang the moon. But Dove doesn't look happy anymore. Oh, I say, maybe I overstepped. I'm so sorry, I was trying to, but I can't finish the sentence because Dove has covered the distance between us in two strides, and I'm suddenly in his arms, in a bear hug. And while I may not be entirely certain what is happening, I know now for sure that he is tall enough to hang the moon.
Are you okay? I ask softly.
After a moment, he says,
I'm so tired,
in a muffled voice. His heart is beating against my cheek. I squeeze back, hopefully comforting him a little. Haven't you been sleeping at night? I ask, peering up at his face.
I keep waking up.
Dove shrugs.
So I start working because it's better than laying there feeling so sad.
It's okay to feel sad, though. You've just lost a woman who raised you like a son, and you loved her so much. It's okay to feel all the sadness. Not that you have to let it in all at once, but you need to let those feelings in, because it's the only way you'll get to the other side. Wearily, Dove lifts his drooping head and looks at me.
Don't worry. I'll be okay.
It's okay if you're not okay, I say, taking his hand. This is your first holiday without her. Let yourself be as sad as you need to be. Just know you're not alone.
Thank you,
he says in a hoarse whisper. I lead him down the hall into the other bedroom and gently push him to sit down on the bed. He does, and slumps back on the pillow, blinking slowly up at the ceiling until his eyes close. I crouch down and take off his shoes.
Put your feet up, Dove,
I whisper. He does, and then opens his eyes and looks sleepily at me, managing a slight smile.
Thanks again,
he whispers back. I cover him with one of his grandmother's crocheted blankets and let the weight settle around his body. A tiny, contented sigh slips from his lips. I tiptoe to the door and flip the lights out.
I'm not done writing,
he murmurs. You are for now, I say. Sleep well, Dove. I start to pull the door closed.
Take a car service,
he calls faintly.
Be careful.
I will.
Promise me, he says.
I stick my face through the crack in the door.
I promise.
Shh. Just close your eyes. Everything's going to be okay. Everything's fine. He doesn't answer this time. I'm smiling as I head downstairs to work. I don't have much time before I really need to head back to my apartment. So I start brain dumping all the thoughts, notes, and new scenes that came out of the park trip today. All that time Dove and I spent hashing out the plot really paid off, and I don't want us to lose our new ideas. It's still his project, of course, but even if he doesn't want to add in the paragraphs I'm writing,
Maybe they'll inspire him. And he's so very tired. I look at the ceiling in the general direction of where he's passed out upstairs. So cute and so sweet. Okay, Abby, focus. Just one more note before I go.
Chapter 9. Dove. I open my eyes to the sound of ice hitting the window panes. The room itself is dark, with gray light illuminating the edges of the shades. It takes me a moment to realize where I am, which is apparently napping under Bubby's afghan in a bedroom I was only supposed to take a quick nap in. I squint at the alarm clock, but it says AM, and that can't be right. It would mean I never got back to work last night. I sit bolt upright. Is that right? Did Abby try to wake me? Did she get home in time? Is she safe? I scramble up from the bed, grabbing my phone on the way to the window. I pull up the shades Abby must have closed last night and stare outside. The world is a blanket of white, and it's still snowing. I frantically search for a message from Abby, but she never checked in last night. My heart is hammering in my chest as I blast out of the bedroom and take the stairs two at a time. I mean, she's a grown New Yorker. She knows what she's doing. No, that doesn't matter. I need to make sure she's safe. I need to make sure she's here. I cancel the phone call I started to make. Abby is in my grandmother's writing chair, slumped over with her head on the desk. There are notes everywhere, and an uncapped red pen in her hand is leaking ink all over her notepad. I wonder if she knows she missed her window of opportunity. She won't be leaving this house anytime soon. For some reason, that thought makes my heart thump in an entirely different way. I can't help but smile as I tiptoe across the Persian carpet, carefully take the pen out of her hand and cap it. My eye catches on the red scrawl everywhere. I pick up the pages. There are all kinds of notes, some of them directly talking to me, making suggestions or telling me how much she likes what I've written. In addition to these notes, she's been writing a lot, and all of it is in red ink in the margins and between the lines of type or printed pages, long form. My smile falters. This is a lot of handwritten material, probably because I dug in earlier when she made her changes on the computer. What a lot of work for her to do on my behalf. And not just that, it's all really good. I read page after page of her writing. It even sounds like my grandmother's style. I am so impressed with her, and more than a little ashamed of myself. I put the work aside and stare down at Abby sleeping with her face on a sticky notepad. Her shoulders are hunched over the desk. This after making me so cozy upstairs. I grab a soft throw pillow from the sofa and bring it back to her, brushing her lovely hair back even as I lift her face slightly so her cheek rests more comfortably. A tiny, sleepy snort slips from her lips, but she doesn't wake up. She has been so unfailingly generous with her time and energy. And I've been so focused on myself. Why is she sticking it out with me? Why on earth didn't she leave after putting me to bed? You are a very good person, Abigail Shore, I murmur. Oslo looks up at me expectantly. The amount of snow outside and the ongoing weather means there's not going to be a big walk this morning. Listen, bud, I whisper. It's not ideal, but we'll make it work. You get 3 minutes to do your business, and then we're coming back inside. I gather some supplies from the kitchen and then put Oslo's leash on and take him to the door. I grab a shovel from the hall, open the door against the whipping wind, and make enough of a path for the pup to prance outside like he's walking the red carpet. Outside, it's as bad as they predicted. I really shouldn't smile. She probably wants to go home. She doesn't have any of her stuff with her. Oslo yips. What? Stop looking at me like that. I'm just in a good mood, is all. He turns his back on me. He clearly doesn't want to come back inside right away. You can have one more minute, but I don't want your paws to freeze. I huddle in the doorway and blow on my hands while he pokes his snout into the snow. So, Oslo, I say, I don't know how much you know about life, but I'd like your opinion. What did you think about Abby at the park yesterday? I thought she seemed really comfortable. Didn't she seem almost huggable? You know what I mean? Do you think any of that meant something? Oslo sniffles in a sprig of fallen evergreen. But it's cold out here, and he keeps looking back into the house where the warmth and the food and the cute girl are all located. I can relate. If you think it means something, put out your left paw. Oslo looks up at me with a very solemn expression. And if you think it means nothing, put out your right paw. Oslo walks past me and heads into the house. Does not responding mean you're thinking about it? I ask him, following him inside just as the phone rings. It's Daniel. I pick it up and say, I'll call you back in 1 minute, because I have to remove the scarf from around Oslo's neck and find my earbuds. While the pup stands over his food dish, I stick my earbuds in and retrieve the bag of dog food, which I can do while talking to my friend. Hey, Daniel, sorry about that. Things have taken a kind of turn.
Oh?
He says. Oslo barks and I pour crunchies into a bowl.
Shh,
I hiss.
What was that?
Daniel asks. I rescued a dog.
Seriously?
Don't worry, it's temporary. Oslo looks up from his bowl.
Huh,
Daniel says. I think we'd consider living together in a more permanent way if he didn't already have a perfectly good, complete post-storm life, I say.
Are we still talking about the dog?
Daniel asks. Of course. There's a pause, and then Daniel asks,
Is Abby still there?
Yeah.
Is that also temporary?
Well, I mean, there I am spluttering at a simple question. What kind of a question is that?
A very clear and specific one?
I don't respond to that, and Daniel says,
Ah, what? Why?
Nothing, he says. Why are you activating your wise mentor sound?
Am I?
Yes.
Perhaps it's because the last time I saw you,
Daniel says,
you had a surprise woman staying in your house. Today you have the same surprise woman, but now also a strange dog. This isn't your norm. If you lived in the suburbs, you'd only be one minivan short of cobbling together an entire family in a matter of days. Is everything okay?
I'm not sure I would call Abby a surprise woman. And the dog's not strange at all, I say. He's pretty cute and nice to have around, if not particularly good at dispensing advice.
You want advice?
Daniel asks.
Some wise mentoring, perhaps?
I should probably accept the wise mentoring, since Oslo's clearly got no game. I walk over to the doorway and peer into the living room. Abby's hand is still limply hanging half over the side of the desk.
Where is Abby right now?
Daniel asks. Asleep at the computer. She fell asleep working on the book and didn't make it home before the storm like she wanted to. I think she stayed up all night helping me. The worst part is that I think she was afraid to type on the manuscript itself because I was so protective of it earlier. So she had to... I pause. I don't know if I can say such a shameful thing.
She had to what? Daniel asks.
Seriously, what? I sigh. She had to write it all in cursive.
Longhand?
He asks in horror.
You're a monster.
Okay, now you're just blatantly mocking me. This is serious. She's gone above and beyond for days now, letting me be sad and bullheaded, and I didn't even let her use the keyboard. I pause. Maybe I am a monster.
So do something about it, Daniel says.
Yesterday I asked Abby to help with the actual writing because at this point I know Bubby would approve. But now I need Abby to know that I really do trust her. Not only that, but I need her. Without her, it would definitely not be as good. In fact, with Abby's touch, it really resembles my grandmother's work. Her sensibility is the same. It's like she's able to channel my grandmother's writing style. But without her?
Yes.
I have to admit this, once and for all. It's what a loving grandson would want to believe resembles his grandmother's work, but it doesn't really.
So take it a step further then. Change the rules.
Through the doorway, I see Abby shift in her sleep. I worry her face is going to fall off the pillow. Thanks, Daniel. I have to go.
Change the...
He's mid-sentence, but I hang up on him because when you're finally ready to change the rules, you really can't wait one extra second to do it. Oslo butts his head against my leg and I look down at him. I get it now. I know what I need to do. I stow my phone and stealth up to where Abby is sleeping. I was just going to fix the pillow and wait until she woke up, but she senses me and opens her eyes. Hi, I say cheerfully. I try to act casual, like I have a good reason for hovering.
She blinks and hurls herself upright, back into the computer chair. She looks at me, then looks around the room, perhaps noting the open curtains and my chipper, bright-eyed vibe.
Dove, why am I still here?
Good morning, I say. Perhaps that wasn't the best opener, because Abby sucks in a startled breath and yells,
Good morning? Oh no, what time is it?
She gets up and runs by me into the hall toward the bathroom. After a minute, she comes running back in, her hands and face dripping wet. I'm still standing by the computer chair with a giant grin on my face. It's like watching the most adorable cartoon character on the planet.
Where's my phone?
She asks, wiping her hands on her shirt. Her phone is peeking out from under a bunch of papers. I lift the papers and Abby grabs it, then runs to the window and is suddenly very, very still.
Oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no.
She's poking furiously at her phone. I check mine too. The trains aren't running. Tomorrow's been declared a snow day at the schools, and nobody is on the road or the sidewalk. She's not going anywhere. We look at each other. It seems inappropriate to suggest that it's not a problem that she's snowed in with me simply because I've decided that she can do even more work on my behalf than she was doing before. Changing the rules sounded better when I was talking to Daniel.
I fell asleep, Abby says.
Yep.
There aren't any trains.
I stuff my hands in my pockets. Nope.
What should I do?
It's pretty obvious to me that you'll need to stay here overnight again. Her eyes are like saucers.
Oh, you think?
Well, you're more than welcome to stay. Pick whatever floor you like. Abby looks from me to the storm out the window and then back to the weather report on her phone. There's a long silence as she contemplates reality. Her lack of immediate enthusiasm gives me pause. I want her to stay. I'm glad she's staying, and not just because of the book. But I guess she doesn't feel the same way. Abby's phone rings, and then again, You should get that, I say. I'm going to clear off the stoop a bit more.
Abby. Leia and Sophie are calling from their hotel room in Florida. I've got them on a video call, and it sure looks pleasant, luxurious, and relaxing in their suite. Sophie is wearing mouse ears. Leia has on enormous white plastic and rhinestone sunglasses. They're crowded together on a sofa. Hey guys, I say, glancing out the window. Dove is busy clanking his shovel against the icy stairs, and I'm sure he can't hear me from here. Let me get some coffee while we talk. I head into the kitchen and pour myself a mug from the carafe. Stop moving around, Leia says. It's making me dizzy. One sec. I grab milk from the fridge and splash some in, leaning against the kitchen counter to take that first delicious sip of the day. Okay, whew, I really needed that. Is there a dog in the story yet? Sophie asks. I need to start on the cover. Is that the first question we want to ask her? Leia says with a smile. I figured we'd get it out of the way. Sipping on my coffee, I look through the doorway to the living room. Oslo is sleeping on the sofa, four paws in the air and his tongue sticking out. Oh yeah, there's a dog. He's a, what kind of dog is Oslo? I mean, really? He's a mutt. A sort of fuzzy, teddy bearish mutt. The good kind that you want to watch TV next to for the rest of your life. His fur is the color of gingerbread, if that helps. Sophie heaves a sigh. The sigh of a cover artist who has been given insufficient direction for several weeks now. It's a start, she says. Where on earth are you, anyway? She's squinting at me, moving so close to the camera, I can see the freckles on her nose. Are you in a bakery? Leia asks. She jostles Sophie to get a better view. The kitchen. That's not your kitchen, Sophie says. Isn't that? That's still D.B. Ziegler's house, where you were yesterday. You just woke up. In D.B. Ziegler's house? With Dove Ziegler? Separate rooms, I say hastily. They still gasp in delight. Oi. And yet. I know, right? But it was an accident. At least, I think it was an accident. I lower my voice a notch in case the door is thinner than I think. I mean, obviously, I'm here helping get this book done. But the thing is, I fully intended to go home before the storm. Do you think my subconscious wanted me to stay?
I think all of you wanted to stay,
Sophie says, snorting with laughter.
Does he snore?
I roll my eyes. I was at the desk. I was just going to jot down a few things, and I fell asleep there.
Ah, says Leia. And you're... Are you asking what it means?
She already knows what it means,
Sophie grins.
She wanted to get snowed in with the hot, nerdy baker she started crushing on, and she did.
I grimace. Why would I do that when I could just say to him, hey, there's a storm coming and you have a bajillion rooms in the house. Can I stay? I mean, he offered.
Because then he might guess that you like him. And even though we're all adults, we must do the dance.
Ah, Leia says, burying her face in her hands. That's depressing.
She looks back into the camera at me.
You do like him, right?
Aside from being an amazing professional baker?
Well, he obviously loves hard and isn't afraid to show it. He isn't intimidated by difficult things and is willing to work his butt off to meet a very high bar. And right this very second, he is tackling the snow on the stoop with the vigor of 1,000 Maccabees.
That does sound kind of hot, Sophie says.
I walk over and peek through the window again. I don't want to objectify him, but yes.
I suppose that means you won't turn the camera on him so we can see,
Leia says.
Ew, no.
Then what's he look like? Sophie asks. You've seen him already, at the Edgar Awards. She frowns, thinking back, and then her eyes widen.
Oh. Oh.
Not fair, Leia says. Give me something.
I think about Dove curled up in an afghan on the bed, falling asleep with his hair in his eyes.
He is very good looking, I whisper. And he's very tall, and that's all you're going to get from me. But I'll give you a better view of this.
I turn back to the kitchen and scan the counters to show off the beautifully staged treats. I'm not looking into the camera, but there are audible gasps coming from the audio. I know, right? This stuff is next level. Sometimes on my way to the refrigerator, I look around and hallucinate that I'm in Paris.
I want to have a crush on a guy who is so talented that it causes me to hallucinate that I'm in Paris, Leia says.
Well, you can't have him. He's mine. It was supposed to be a jokey sort of thing, but it doesn't land that way for any of us. Sophie and Leia look at each other with big smiles on their faces.
We'll meet him when we get back, Sophie says.
Will they?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? What happens when the holiday break is over and the work is done? Is everything over? Are we still friends? Are we something else? The front door opens, and I hear Dove knocking snow off his boots.
I have to get back to work, I say pointedly.
Sophie and Leia blow kisses through the phone, and I respond with finger hearts as the call ends.
Chapter 10. Dove. The stoop is going to be worthy of another clearing in 20 minutes, so there wasn't much point to that exercise besides the exercise. But I needed a moment to think. And of course, the moment I see Abby coming out the kitchen, I just blurt out the headline without any context. I don't want you to leave. I mean, I don't think you should risk leaving. I'd be worried if you walked out that front door into horrible conditions just because I'm annoying. Abby looks startled, but then she flashes a mischievous grin. I don't find you that annoying. I mean, really, you're not annoying at all so much as maybe slightly pompous on rare occasions. And pompous is just a skosh away from super confident, which is a positive.
Maybe you should risk leaving, I say dryly.
I was kidding. You're not annoying at all.
A puzzled expression passes across her face, and she says more to herself than me.
In fact, I enjoy your company more than I thought possible given how we started.
In a more business-like tone, she says,
And now that I'm not going anywhere, I'm ready to get this to the finish line. The storm was actually a blessing from a productivity and efficiency point of view. I can edit the pages as fast as you write. In fact, I have a few ideas I was working on last night to go over with you. You don't have to take any of my suggestions or rewrites, but some of them could really round out the end of Act 2.
She snatches up the pages she obviously spent hours working on last night and holds them out to me like they're scratch paper.
Just some ideas for the home stretch. I won't be offended if you throw it all away.
I stare at her, willing myself not to hug her. It's a lot of work for someone to do just to throw it away. She shakes the pages at me.
Don't worry about it. If it's useful, great. If not, no biggie. What's wrong, Dove? Are you with me? We're so close to the end, I can taste it, and then this whole thing will be off your plate. Speaking of plates, let's not forget we need to mention the silver vegetable dish before listeners get to the chapter where Ginger sneaks into the room where the roast beef is sitting on the table. Remember? We were going to layer it in so that when it's discovered in the larder instead of the upstairs closet, it doesn't seem like we pulled it out of our...
Abby, hold on a second. There's actually something I want to say to you.
Okay, toss everything else, but please trust me about the vegetable dish. It's an important clue.
She takes me by the arms and peers up at me, all flushed cheeks and tangled hair.
I mean, only if you want to. I don't mean to push you too hard, but if you're amenable to a little pushing, we can totally do this.
I'm so charmed, I don't know how to respond. Yes, I'm amenable to a little pushing, and I'm amenable to a whole lot more. And also, you really read all her books. You loved those books. You loved the genre and the tropes and the running jokes through the whole series. You respected her writing, and it made both of you happy. You were right all along. You are right now. The thing I want to say to you is this. Let's change places.
You don't like this chair anymore?
Abby looks around at the options. No, I mean, you take the chair. You run the show. Abby stares at me blankly. Unless you don't want to. I don't expect you to do more work than you've already done. But at one point you wanted to run the show, so I thought maybe you still did.
You want me to write the book now? Like actually type into the manuscript?
I nod. It's supposed to be the ultimate compliment, but I can also see how, given what I originally said, it might seem like not a compliment. She's smiling now, but I'm not sure if it's for real or she's trying to be nice. We both fall silent. I frown. This isn't panning out like I thought it would. Suddenly, she bursts into overblown laughter. Why is that so funny? Her mouth snaps shut and the laughter stops. Abby clears her throat and blinks.
I'm not sure why I'm laughing. I probably didn't sleep that well last night.
She looks around the room, and then her eyes land back on me.
What happened between last night and this morning?
Oh, I can tell you what happened last night. Thanks to you, I got a full night's sleep and regained my sanity. When I woke up in the morning, I saw all of this. I grab a handful of her inky, handwritten pages. This is great, in every way. You are excellent at this, and also really dedicated. What I'm trying to say is that if you are still willing, I want to get out of your way. I want to turn the computer over to you and just make life about catering to your every whim until that book is done. Abby looks incredulous.
Is this part of my Paris hallucination?
She mumbles faintly. What is she talking about? Is that a yes? She studies my face.
You're serious. You want to switch places. Are you sure?
Absolutely. I put my hand on my heart. Abigail, sure. I probably don't deserve it, but will you help me?
Yes,
she says immediately. And then we both heave audible sighs of relief.
Well,
Abby says, making a big show of dusting off her hands.
I'm going to need to shower before I really dig in. Can I borrow some things?
Give me 2 seconds. I bound upstairs, ridiculously happy about how everything is working out. I go upstairs and come back with my arms full of everything and anything she could need. I would like to make it possible for her to never return home again.
You're offering me your underwear?
Abby asks. First of all, I have here a broad assortment of items, including but not limited to a sweatshirt, t-shirts, and various toiletries. Second of all, those are boxers.
Same thing as underwear.
Not true. These are more akin to shorts. That's the spirit in which I offer them.
Shorts?
She asks dubiously.
What does it mean that you think we might be remotely the same waist size?
Oh, I figured you could just do that thing where you fold the waistband in and over. She sighs loudly.
The only thing sadder than you sitting around in your underwear trying to coax words onto the page is me sitting in your underwear trying to coax words onto the page. We'd better make a lot of progress today.
I try not to show I'm disappointed that she's anxious to leave as soon as possible.
Does she not realize those boxers are brand new?
out of the box. If you need anything else, let me know.
Thanks, she says with a smile. You know, you don't have to overdo it. I'm happy to be here, working on this with you.
Honestly, I say, I can hardly believe my luck. I will be the best second in command you can possibly imagine. Besides being a diligent second pair of eyes, proofreader, story consultant, and beta reader, I will provide sustenance, adjust the ambient temperature at your whim, provide additional brainstorming upon request, and make you as comfortable as I can in every way. Doesn't that sound like a perfect editor? Abby laughs.
Sounds like the perfect boyfriend.
We both freeze. I wouldn't have guessed the first time we met that a banker would be your type, I joke, trying to loosen up the atmosphere again. She looks at me funny.
Did you just say banker?
Have we not covered this piece of information? Yes.
You're a banker?
Yeah.
You said you were a baker. You're obviously a baker.
I clear my throat. I don't think I said that, actually.
Well, I mean, I think you did. And when I said something about it being awesome to have a friend who was a professional baker, you didn't say you weren't, right?
I didn't think you were being literal. It's the closest link I have to Bubby, and it puts me in a good mood, so I do it a lot and I'm pretty good at it. It's not my actual occupation. I start laughing because, seriously? Is she serious?
Abby is staring at me. You're a banker?
Yeah. Abby's jaw has dropped. Her arms are outstretched, palms up toward the heavens in a kind of oh my gosh stance. And she seems to be looking around for someone to corroborate this surprisingly surprising piece of news with someone who isn't me. Does this change something? I ask. Abby's eyes widen.
No, sorry. Of course not. I'm thrown is all. I thought you were a nerdy baker living in your grandmother's house whipping up desserts and writing. It all seemed very cozy and delightful and bookish.
I'm suddenly nervous. Is this all less cozy and delightful and bookish than it was 5 minutes ago?
That's the thing, Abby says in a voice of wonder. She picks up all the stuff I just brought down to her and heads for the stairs. I don't think it is less. I really don't think it is. Huh. How about that? I'm going to go take that shower now.
It's exactly the same amount of cozy and delightful for sure, I call out. Maybe like 5% less bookish if I'm being fair. I look at Oslo. Right? Can you believe it? She thought I was a professional baker. I start laughing, but Oslo's looking at me like he's surprised I'm not a baker either. I head to the kitchen to boil Abby some tea. The tea kettle is always on in this house. Who says a banker can't make things cozy, delightful, and bookish?
Abby. After a nice hot shower, I towel dry my hair, put on comically large t-shirt and boxers, and then head back down to the computer. I guess Dove hears me because he calls out from the kitchen. I'm doing a second cup. Coffee or tea? Both? I'll start with coffee, though. Thanks. I'm going to need a lot of caffeine to get through the day because I did not sleep well on my bed of office supplies last night. I power up the computer and find my place in the story. 10 minutes later, Dove comes out with the steaming mug of Joe. He puts it down where I can reach it and then perches against the sofa. I hear him chuckle softly. I keep my hands on the keyboard but shift my gaze to his smiling face. Yes, I ask. It's kind of crazy that you're sitting in my living room in my underwear, he says. I give him a stern look. You said spiritually they were shorts. Dove can't stop grinning. I go back to typing. But yes, I agree that it is kind of crazy that I'm sitting in your living room in your spiritual shorts. Call me when you want to switch to tea, he says. In the meantime, I'll do some chop and prep for dinner. I nod. I focus on the manuscript and make a sizable amount of progress in the span of an hour, during which time Dove brings me an endless parade of snacks and soft words of encouragement. A woman could get used to this. But it's not all easy. I'm stuck on the romantic arc. I realize this is a cozy mystery and all, but it's the end of the series, and the two fan favorites have been circling each other for nearly 25 books. It's up to me to deliver the feels. So why am I having trouble getting the protagonists together? They are obviously crushing hard. And Dove managed to bring them a whole lot closer with a winter snowstorm. So now they just need to admit their feelings and get together. There aren't that many pages left.
Hmm.
Okay, let me back up and take stock of what's going on.